Welcome inside the Legends Lounge, where baseball VIPs are hanging out and talking about their life in the game.
The legendary Kirk Gibson about to join us inside the lounge, Alana. And also, this is Parkinson's Awareness Month in April, and Kirk will address that. Kirk Gibson has had a storied career. He is still broadcasting now. He's been a manager. Of course, you can Google him if you are unaware of his playing accomplishments for the youngins out there, but this is a guy who's done a lot in the game, and his name's been around the game for a long time for a variety of roles.
All you need to know is game one of the 1988 World Series. Look it up. If you don't know, now you know.
Yeah. And that'll help to tell the story of how emotional he is as a player, how fiery he is too. You can feel it in addition to seeing it. So let's bring the great Kirk Gibson inside the lounge.
Sometimes the name of the show just fits perfectly with the guest's credentials. Legendary moments in this 17-year ride through the big leagues. Getting on base over 30% of the time. Slug 463. 1984 World Series champ with Detroit. 1988 champ with the Dodgers. Also the unique combination when you're looking at the personal credentials of winning MVP in his playing days in 88. And a Manager of the Year award in 2011, running the Arizona Diamondbacks. Kirk Gibson hanging out with us in the lounge. Kirk, how's life?
It's always interesting. You got to keep it that way. You got to make sure you're moving enough. Everybody says you need rest, which is true. But, you know, you got to get some sleep. You know, I get a nap here or there if I need it. But sleeping is boring to me. So we keep moving, and as you grow older, you're appreciative of the opportunity that you had. You realize that things pass you by, or they're going to try and pass you by, and you kind of come up. You got a choice in your life, and I try and do the things that I know are fun, and sometimes challenging, adventurous. Still have the need for speed and contact. And you know, competition, and that's the way I go about it. And I've got four kids. I'm still married to my wife, Joanne, and I've got grandkids now. And there's plenty to do. And I've always tried to stay positive and productive. And we all would agree, I think, that that's something we can't get enough in today's day and age.
You know, you mentioned keeping it interesting, Kirk, that it's important. What are you doing to keep it interesting? What fulfills you these days?
I well, first of all, Sparky Anderson was my first big league coach, and he was really took us all the tasks by telling us we're going to win a World Series. But if we don't do it the right way, and if we don't give part of what you're going to learn while you do it back, it's not worth it. So in that sense, it took him a long time to get to some of us like me and understand that there are some things that you pick up along the way that can help people, and to be a giver is better than a taker. And so we do that. You know, I have Parkinson's now. I do a ton with my foundation, the Kirk Gibson Foundation. It's good for me, and to be with others who have to deal with that and to help them, and vice versa, and create. It's a new team, not one that I would pick for you, but we do it. And, you know, my wife says she doesn't know how I do it because she says, I get all the parky I want. You know, it's like when you're helping others, you get more. And I just have to do it. It's just the way I am. And, you know, you have responsibility. We all know what it is. And you have to pay attention to it and take care of it and try and help others, help yourself. And, you know, fun is fun. You know, like, I'm a normal person. I like activity. You know, I do activities that are going to help me with my, with Parky. I ping pong, play pool, pickleball. I just got done bowling like 9 or 10 games. I still prove I can get on my snowmobile. I climb in the trees. Anything that you ever did, I kind of try and circle back and see if I can do it, because it's more challenging, not only because of the Parkinson's, but because I'm sick. I'll be 66 years old in another month, and age takes something out of you. So I think you feel there's an obligation to prove that you can do certain things. And it's just like when I was young and was playing for the Detroit Tigers or for the Dodgers, you got to prove yourself. If you don't, somebody else kicks you out. They come and get your job. You got to figure something else to do. So it really hasn't changed. I don't want to be bored. I don't want to not try things. And, you know, I had a knee replacement. That was miserable, but, you know, we're on our way now, and we'll keep doing that and do a lot of stuff with our friends. Go wherever. You know, I like to hang where the eagles fly. You sit and watch that animal or that bird. It's magnificent. And there's a lesson everywhere if you take a moment to stop and watch.
Very true.
Gibby, so, you know, this is running during April, which is Parkinson's Awareness Month. And I'm sure, you know, you've spoken to many people about what you've gone through and, you know, others that are diagnosed with the disease from a verbal component. But just by what you're describing, your actions, it actually sets the tone for so many others that are going through this or are diagnosed with this. And you've been able to obviously be very vocal about it. And so if someone's like, hey, I got to deal with this now, they can look to someone like you and the way that you're living your life. And that alone is inspirational for people to say, hey, you can still do tons of things and live the life that you want to live. And like you said, there might be more challenges involved with that, but do you feel like, just as in, and this might be really going for it with an analogy here, you're a major league player. People are looking up to you more than your average Joe. It's just how it is. So now with what you're dealing with, it's the same thing. Your actions are going to set the tone for many others who look up to you or who know, because you're a public figure, what you're going through. So do you feel, I don't want to say the onus, but do you feel the responsibility and even sometimes, I should say, you know, gratitude that you're able to do what you're doing and others can look at that and it improves their life because they know that, you know, this doesn't just mean they're going to be held back from certain physical actions that they still want to do in life.
Yeah, I'm very humbled by the whole thing. I guess in a sense, I never quit. So I got to fail all those times and still go for it and then had some validation from time to time. That's just the way it is. You know, people do the home run. I mean, if you look at the home run, I don't know how it happened. You know, it's not a good swing. I did have an idea what was coming. And, you know, that's why guys, they get, if you can watch guys in baseball, they get a jam shot hit, they're happy as can be. They're smiling, they're giving their first base coach a high five. They hit a rocket for an out, and they're all pissed off, you know. So it's the result that they are worried about, when the reality of it is, it's the mechanic, you know, in my opinion, when you learn to do that. And then you can control what you say to yourself from that point on. You can tell yourself you stink, or you can say, God, that's not like me. I usually do better in those situations. And then think about a good moment that you can really feel how you remember how you felt in that moment. And you say, that's not like me. I usually perform better in these situations. Plug that emotion, the feeling of a good moment, and just go on to the next at bat. And you're ready for your next at bat. If you beat yourself up, you add another component. People talk about a lot of the things that they don't want to happen. Okay. They think about, you know, like that AB, you know, I had every excuse in the world not to play. And I could have said, no, I couldn't play. But I just went the other way. As I sat there with Oral Hershiser in the training room, putting ice on there after I'd gotten all these injections, we kind of started talking a little bit here and there. I'm watching the lineup where it is, and we know Eckersley's coming in, and just like Oral when he beat the Mets. And then the next day, Jay Howe got kicked out of the game because of the pine tar.
Yeah.
Okay, Oral threw. He started and won the game. And then the next night came out of the bullpen. Tommy didn't know he was down there. Oral just paid attention. That's what you do. You create these moments and you challenge yourself to believe that it's going to happen. And the way you imprint that feeling is through a moment that you've gone through in your life that really made you feel like you could accomplish anything in the world. And that's kind of what I did. And I went out on the bench and Socia's like, what are you doing out here? I'm going to hit, you know? And those guys all told me that they didn't want me to embarrass myself. I never thought about being embarrassed. You know, I can remember guys burying me in Yankee Stadium. And I looked bad, struck out 1, 2, 3, 4 times, fouled out the fifth time. And they're burying me, telling me I stunk, and my mom and everybody that I know. And little did they know, I was just thinking, this is really going to be fun. I'm going to feel great when I win the game. And then all of a sudden, they're just going to shut up. That's going to feel really good. And so sure enough, it happened. And I walked back to the dugout, never looked at him, never said a word. But I utilized that situation and how it made me feel. Yeah, you know, you when things happen, you got to grab something that's going to make that emotion vivid when you go to get it. And I looked at a picture yesterday that I was signing for somebody. I had my arm up in the air. That's right when I knew that the ball was gone. I felt really good, and that's very valuable for me to use when I'm trying to create moments. You know, people laugh at it, and it's not hard to do. Maybe it's far-fetched, but, you know, it doesn't happen all the time. But it did happen a couple times, and in my world, it's worth it. So I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to try and convince others to do it. I was talking to Bakersfield College, their baseball team. I hanging out, watching those guys. And I told them the stuff, and they're like, yeah. I mean, I had somebody who recommended I go see a guy in Seattle. His name was Frank Bartonetti. And I spent time with this short Italian guy, really cool. You know, in his 61 Mercedes convertible, you know, you just pull up. It was just, I've never heard a guy say one negative thing in his whole life, beat cancer with his mind. He's, you know, there are people out there for us all. If you just, you know, slow down a little bit, pay attention. And I'm here to tell you, like I told them, I want in 10 years, I think I'll still be around in 10 years, that one of these guys do something, and we run into each other somewhere and say, yeah, I remember that day when you told us to be positive, utilize it. And hopefully they get to, you know, have that same feeling. And that's what it's all about, because it's not fun yourself, but when the party gets bigger, like a parade, parade's better than MVP.
Because it means you, the whole team won, right? I mean, Gibby, you're so positive right now. You're so positive in your approach. And every time I've heard anything about you, just from talking to former teammates or just learning as much as I could about you, you've always been a very direct guy. You're direct, no nonsense, and took things very seriously. Do you think you're different now in your approach, having, you know, after your playing days and and going through what you're going through and being an ambassador?
I think I'm still direct. but I softened the way I utilize it, probably. But, you know, when I do these things that I do, you know, I want to win. And, you know, I'm not going to throw any games to my kids or my mom was alive. The last game of cards I played her, she was showing me her cards. I was looking in her hand. I told her, you know, the only thing that's different about it is I'm telling you I'm looking. If you're not going to hide them, that's your problem. Oh, honey. Oh, dear. Oh, for heaven's sakes. But, you know, I think when you age and you slow down a little bit, that most people are more tactful and probably think more before they say certain things, because you're a slave of what you say and a master of what you don't. So
very good. I like that. I'm gonna keep that.
Yeah.
Hey, Gibby, I want to go back to how you said, you know, sky's the limit and you want to fly where the eagles fly. I didn't realize, I mean, your story is well documented in many ways, right? Like, we're not doing an hour on the homer. I think you've done that quite a bit. We like to kind of go in other directions, personal life. And for me, something that stood out when I was reading back about the 84 season is after that, you set an altitude record for a Cessna 206 plane reaching a height over 25,000 feet. So give us more on that. I don't even know that portion of your life. So I want to know what that was all about and if any of that continued.
Well, I don't fly anymore. I have Parkinson's, and that probably would not be a good combination.
Fair.
I could fly, okay? I mean, in my life, I've gone through stages, and about 1985, I decided I was looking for something to do, and I decided, and I always liked airplane. My uncle, Chuck Schreier, was a colonel in the Air Force, and we were in Dover, Delaware with them on base. He took me over to a C-133 transport plane, and he took me into the cockpit and everything, and there's all these gauges and levers and everything. You've seen one. And I was just like, wow. You know, it's like flying's like being the Wizard of Oz. Behind the curtain, you got all these buttons. You know, and then it interests me. And I basically self-taught myself and took my tests. I've flown a lot of hours. I bought a float plane. It was actually an amphibious plane. It was a Cessna 206. Because they used to have the EAA fly-in in spring training, so I went over there, and this guy had this 206 that was converted, had a turbine on it, had amphibs on it, and when I went to spring training, I'd fly it down from Michigan. I'd take the floats off for the winter and put the wheels on, and, you know, it's just, we were just talking one day, somebody said, why not? It was kind of for Allison Turbine. They were trying to prove their engine and the conversion was, you know, everything they said it was. And it was, we were climbing at 400 or 500 foot a minute still, but that air is really thin up there. And you got those little wings in that little plane. And I could hear the commercial airline pilots saying, you know, I think it was Orlando Center. You know, am I seeing a Cessna up here? They were kind of shocked, but we were climbing out. It's not pressurized. And also doesn't have oxygen. So you have to wear it, and you're like pinching your fingers to make sure their blood's still going, because you go to sleep, you know, up there, you go to sleep with no oxygen. So we did that, and I remember Jim Campbell, our president of the Tigers, he was mad at me because
I bet
he took away from it was like opening day of spring training. Like, you know, okay, I practice. Right? I'll be ready to practice tomorrow. Like I'm bored. So we're doing that. I've always liked machinery, and then I got a small jet after that and flew that around. I always had somebody else with me because, you know, I remember Thurman Munson, what happened to him, and things can get away from you really quick. But, you know, that's always interested me. You know, I've always loved to run machinery, you know, bulldozers, you know, backhoes, tractors. It's always interested me to take them apart and fix them. I walk into rooms, stadiums, and I look and kind of visualize what's running underneath the walls and stuff. It's just the way I am. I like to do that to pitchers too, by the way.
You know? Try to dissect what's going on.
Yeah, what buttons are you going to try and push on me? So, you know, and that's just, I love the snowmobile. I used to have horses. I love to ride them. Just, you know, it's kind of a coordination thing. And I think it helped round me. And to this day, I look for challenges and things that give you an euphoric feeling. And you want to experience it. And I tried to do that. I did it then. And I don't know if it's still, I still hold it or not, but at the time it was fun. It was a lot of fun. That I flew a helicopter a couple times.
Wow.
That was fun too, but it's so dangerous, you know. maybe that's why I like it. When we fly across the country as a baseball team, there was a time, you know, the pilots left the door open all the time. I was right up in there all the time. That's just saying, what's this, what's that? And over the years, let's say that we got to know some people and got to experience what it felt like to fly a big airplane like that.
Ah, interesting. So maybe you were piloting some people that didn't realize that you were taking the reins, huh?
I didn't say that.
Do you ever think about what your life would have been like, Gibby, if you actually had gone the NFL route? I mean, you were drafted for baseball in the first round, of course, by the Tigers, but you're also drafted in the seventh round by the Cardinals in the NFL. Do you ever think about that?
I was sure I was going to go to the NFL as a junior. I went to college at Michigan State.
Right.
As a nobody, you know, they list the guys who they sign on National Signing Day. And I remember Eugene Bird, East St. Louis, Illinois, Parade All-American, All-American. You know, these guys come in with heavy decorations. Curtis Griffin, same thing in Michigan. And, you know, again, it's the way I am is, I was at the bottom, Kirk Gibson, third team honorable mention, Oakland County, all Oakland County, Michigan. But I got a kick out of that because nobody knew who I was. And, you know, I sat down with my dad and I believed I was going to start as a wide receiver the first game. And I ran and made myself faster morning and night. And I knew that I was going to pick up. I knew I'd be on scout team. You know what that is?
Of course. Absolutely.
They bring the board up. And they go. So here they go. Here's the play, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I still have my playbook from Michigan State, but here's the play. And I see that it's a sweep right. I'm supposed to crack back on the strong safety. So our safety, the number one first team safety was Tommy Graves. He was really tall, had a big old afro, and The one thing that we were told is they're saying, don't mess with that guy. He's a badass. Nobody fucks with Tommy. I'm sitting down there. I'm saying, well, I guess if I want to make a statement, you know, here
you got to F with him, huh?
So I went down in there and flattened him. He was pissed. So then they ran first team defense against or first team offense against defensive scout team. Then we were back up. They put the play up. It was the same play that I'd gotten Graves on. And Graves, I went down there and got my 3-point stance. I was peeking out of the side of my helmet. He's like, double strap it, man. So I went down in there. I said, well, you know what? You can stumble. You can somehow trip. Because you don't want to hit this guy. He knew I was coming down there. Because they told him to run the same play. And I went down in there. And I smoked him and he smoked me. We got down. I couldn't breathe. I had a stinger. I just jogged out of there like I was fine. And we watched films that night after dinner. And the next morning, I was listed as the starting flanker.
There you have it.
You've got to go for it if you're going to go for it.
Heck yeah.
In baseball, my first at bat, when I got called up in September of 79, we were playing the Yankees. And, you know, I was in that little dugout. I got called up, and I hadn't played for a couple games. And the Yankees took the lead in the top of the ninth. So, you know, Gossage gets up. This is 1979. Nobody wanted to face Gossage. All of a sudden, everybody just got to go to the bathroom. I'm sitting there. So I went down there by the bat rack, and I'm clanking around. Sparky's like, what do you want, big boy? I looked down at Gossage. I don't know why I did it. I'm looking at Gossage. He goes, you want him? You got him. So there's two outs. We got a guy on. We're down by a run. And I get up there. I'm thinking, he's the best. I want to see him. First goose, he just nods his head. Ball hits by, swung and fouled it straight back. Second pitch like that. Third pitch, strike three. I mean, the whole at bat seemed like it took about 20 seconds. He just went back. And, you know, I went back in there and I felt good because I knew that I was going against the best. Well, you know, 5 years later, he was told to walk me in the World Series and he didn't. And I'd been working mentally about getting him in the World Series. And Dick Williams said four pitches and he shook him off. Williams
went out there
and there's a video of it. He's like, you know, he says, you're talking about striking him out? And he says, I've had good success, which he had. I was like 1 for 16, 9 or 10 Ks. But I'm looking at Sparky saying, taking him deep, 10 bucks, 10 bucks. Lucky enough, you know, I got him. So, you know, it's just kind of, you got to challenge yourself. You can't give in. And I certainly try and promote that to the rest of my teammates. But, hey, there's so many instances, so many things that happen in everybody's life that are so tough, and the outcome is so what you don't want. But, you know, to me, 1 in a million, it's fine with me. Mm-hmm. I dig it.
I mean, some daredevil stories going on here, Alana, like from that more than I knew about in terms of challenging yourself and believing in yourself, really, Gibby. So from on the field to off the field as well. By the way, one more thing on the football front. How you got drafted, but how serious was the thought and consideration, especially given that you picked up baseball much later than you did football? And I just find, you know, like I look at Cardinals, although that was St. Louis Cardinals. Is that correct that you were drafted by the NFL?
But here's the thing. I was trending up in football my junior year. I had a really good year. I was My speed was way up. I was 225, 230 pounds. I was equipped. The DBs at the time were not very big. Like there was a couple that were, but for the most part, I was 6'3", 225, 230, ran a 4'2", 340. And, you know, they'd be talking trash to me. And then I just look at them. I just, when I caught the ball, I just try to run them over because they weren't as big as me. And so I had the advantage, but I loved contact. And then after my junior year, my coach, Daryl Rogers, came up to me and said, why don't you go out for baseball? Because I was not playing baseball in college. Okay. He says, if you do anything, you're going to be a top five pick. So I went out and I had an All-American year in baseball. And now everybody wants to draft me. But the Tigers came to me and said, they were my hometown team. They said, I told everybody, Bertie Tebbets came from the Yankees. I said, I'm not, you know, don't waste your draft pick. I'm going back to play football. Hmm. He said, Mr. Steinbrenner said, don't come back without him. And I said, well, better go to another team. So what happens, I told the Tigers, I'll sign, but you got to let me come back and play my senior year of football. Because I wasn't going to walk out on my teammates. And I just enjoyed it too much. Mm-hmm. And so I went down to, and I told those guys that I would not go to the NFL, that I would stay with, committed to baseball. So my junior year was over. I went down, I played baseball, got drafted, went and played 50 games in the Florida State League, came back and played football. And, you know, I bought a stereo, a van, and a waterbed. I went through my senior year. then when that was done, I played in the Hula Bowl.
Wow.
Senior Bowl. And I was done with football.
What a senior year.
St. Louis, they wanted to draft me, but I was done. I guaranteed those guys I wouldn't do it. I was a man of my word. So they drafted me in the seventh round, but I never considered that. I was into baseball, and I was learning how to play the game in front of a lot of people, and I was brutal. So, I mean, but that, college is the best time of your life, right? Yeah. Let me get water for a second. You can't.
No, you're good. That's a lot. It's a reverse Kyler Murray too. Cardinals. No doubt. He shunned the Cardinals.
I think Kyler Murray kind of wishes he went the MLB route at this point.
Well, you know what?
Of the money, but I mean,
he's on a pretty thick contract though.
No, I know. Not because of the money. But, I'm saying maybe just because of the beating.
That's true.
Yeah, that's why I mean, I like to hit, so I probably would have got hurt, to be honest with you. So that and the basic players agreement at the time, baseball was way ahead, and I got to play in my hometown, Detroit Tigers, mm-hmm. in Michigan. And, you know, I mean, hell, I like I say, I went there. I wasn't recruited by hardly anybody. But when I came out, I was heavily recruited, so it was a little different. And, you know, it was easier being a nobody than it was somebody that everybody knew about. And, you know, they're being very judgmental. When you play football, you put your pads on, they tell you to go out and kill the guy. And you're supposed to take your pads off and walk out the door and be a nice guy. Right. I had a problem with that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just, it was a challenge. I wasn't ready for what the attention and the, you know, what people would say about me. And I didn't really want to change, but in the end, I had to change because I was kind of arrogant.
I'd say confident, but at least you could back it up with your play and the production.
Sometimes. Sometimes. Sometimes I did. Sometimes I didn't.
Well, Gibby, it was an absolute pleasure sharing some stories. We appreciate the time and getting some inside word and getting to elaborate on some things that are really important. important in your life, and also, you know, in the way that you got to who you are today. So keep at it, keep doing some daredevilish things. And we'll keep following it. But Gibby, it was a pleasure.
Would you guys, I'd like to, you know, make sure you get my KirkGibsonFoundation.org.
Oh, 100%.
Because what we do is,
please.
We're trying to help people understand that it's not a death sentence, that we try and create things that improve quality of life. And it's tough. I mean, it's hard. People are sick in many ways. You know, we're trying to do our part, and anything that anybody can do or need, people write me and I call them and I talk to them, and I'll do the best I can. I don't have all the answers, but I'll give them all the effort that I can give them to try and ensure that they have some fun times and they can help others.
Yeah, it's KirkGibsonFoundation.org. Again, it's KirkGibsonFoundation.org, and we'll make sure that we put it on all of our, when this is, you know, post-production, it'll be on there, and we'll make sure everyone listening knows exactly where they can go to help.
Sounds good. Thanks, you guys. Stay healthy.
Thanks, Gibby. Appreciate
you.
Thanks,
Gibby. You too. Cheers.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care.
So how many speeds does Kirk Gibson have, Lana?
One speed, like run through a wall kind of speed. I mean, it's 0 to 100 quickly, and you can tell that he's so emotional and passionate about everything that he does. Every single thing he does it 150%. I mean, that's just who Kirk Gibson is. That's what's made him great. That's what's made him, you know, over the course of his playing career, feared. I mean, if you're on a scout team at Michigan State and you're told not to hit the first string guys, and you go out there and you're leveling guys, and you're told not to do it, and you do it again, and all of a sudden they're like, okay, well, here we go. We got to put this guy on the team. It just tells you something.
That is a bold choice. Hey, don't hit the first stringer. Again, sir, do not hit the first stringer. I do not care. I should be the first stringer. Okay. That's intent. Athlete. Yeah, I like that. And he knew how talented he was as an athlete. So I'll give him that. And we appreciate him kind of enlightening us on, you know, what he's gone through with Parkinson's and making sure he gets the word out during a month when that is highlighted. Now time for This Week in Baseball. Actually, here, this is very fitting because this guy had one speed as well. Dustin Pedroia, absolute gamer. He will do whatever it takes to win a damn ball game. And April 18th of 2016, he turned not one, not two, not three, not four, but five double plays in a 9-inning game, tying the record for most double plays turned in a game by a second baseman. That record was matched by Hall of Famer Bobby Doerr, August 8, 1946. So
interesting. August 8th, 1946. August 8th is my birthday. I was not born, however, in 1946, so I didn't see Doerr do it. But you're right. Dustin Pedroia knows one speed, and it is 150 miles an hour, just like it was for Kirk Gibson. What I love about the fact, though, Scott, that he turned five double plays, the most by a second baseman in one game, is that means that the ball was actually put in play. It means that people weren't striking out or they weren't just hitting it over the wall. I love that. I love that fact. I mean, he was so good defensively. And this is a guy that wasn't, you know, your prototypical stature of what you would assume a professional athlete was. I mean, he was a smaller guy and he made the most of it. And he had the arrogance and the confidence, but he also had the play to back it up. And this is the guy that, you know, the laser show we used to talk about. And of course, Kevin Millar, who you and I work with, you know, claims that Kevin is the real 1-5, but I think Dustin Pedroia is the real 1-5 for the Boston Red Sox. And he was a pleasure to watch, you know, and Boston fans, rightfully so, loved his hustle and his work ethic.
He's big for the baseball recruiting pitch. Great athletes out there in the world, Altuve, Pedroia. If you're not the tallest, if you're not the biggest or strongest or bulkiest or whatever, that could hold you back from a basketball or a football career. that does not necessarily hold you back as much in a baseball career. So we need those.
You look at Jose Altuve standing next to Aaron Judge or Giancarlo Stanton when the Astros are playing the Yankees, and you're like, oh my goodness. Or even Shohei Ohtani, who is just a beast of a human being on both sides of the ball, literally and figuratively. But yeah, they're Jose Altuve is one of the best leadoff guys in the game. And he hits for power too. He doesn't just hit for average. So there is no one mold. You know, we talked about there's no one path to get where we are. Well, there's no mold of being a very successful baseball player.
And our sport will take the Jordan Walkers, who look like they can play any sport with ease, but also on Boston, rookie Yoshida. Not a big dude. He's like listed maybe 5'8", hits tanks. I love it. So very good for the sport. And thank you again to Kirk Gibson for joining us this week. Time to close up the lounge.
The Legends Lounge Podcast is brought to you by Major League Alumni Marketing. Hit us with questions or comments at legendslounge@mlbpaa.com. Check out our memorabilia at mlamauthentics.com. Later, Legends.